This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome everyone to the Nichols Family Lawyers podcast. I'm Sally Nichols, founder and managing partner of Nichols Family Lawyers. Today I will be speaking with two guests, Leslie Pedetza and Lisa Gale. Leslie is the CEO of the Ilana and Madeline Foundation, a well-known children's charity supporting Australian children who have experienced or witnessed violence. The Ilana and Madeline Foundation offers our community a broad range of care, prevention and advocacy programs for children. My second guest, Lisa Gale, is Assistant Commissioner, Northern Command of ACE and Child Exploitation in Australia. Leslie, Lisa and I will be speaking today about some of the challenges that children might face in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, but particularly focusing on cyber safety. As a parent myself, this issue is very important, but it is also an issue which we as a community should be turning our minds to. Welcome, Leslie and Lisa, and thank you for joining me.
Lovely. Thank you, Sally.
So our whole world is now going virtual, it would seem, including schools for many children. What challenges or risks to children might we expect in this new virtual world? Leslie, would you Lisa, would you like to start?
No, Leslie, I think this, happy for Leslie to start.
Well, before we go on to the virtual world, I think the first thing that I want to say is that children, like all of us, are feeling a range of emotions. We're all worried a little bit about our own health and our community and the safety and health of our loved ones, especially the people we can't see. I think most of us have picked up on some of the anxiety about the impact on the economy, and most kids probably know somebody who's lost their jobs. Children are feeling pretty disconnected because schools have suddenly stopped being places where they go every day, and not being able to go to the park and go to the shops and go to the places where they normally go, to church, to libraries, to playgrounds. They're all things that have made a lot of kids feel what's happening in their world. On the other hand, we also know that a lot of children are really enjoying having their families at home with them 7 days a week, and seeing mum and dad so much more often, and being able to have dinner together so much more often, and doing a lot of things that they might not have had time to do before, like walk the dog together as a family, cooking together, reading, playing games together. So the world's changed a lot, and not all of it's terrible, but I think that we really need to recognise that children, just like all of us, are really trying to come to terms pretty quickly with some very major challenges, and a sense that there is an external threat to their lives that they might not have lived with before.
What do you think parents can do to support their children's connection with friends and school community, but in a sustainable and healthy way, Leslie?
Look, you know, it's interesting. This time has really, I think, put paid to the debate that we've been having for some time. You know, for a long time we've had this debate, how often should our children use screens? You know, how important is technology in our kids' lives? Let's have a really strong balance around technology. For all of us, while our children are being physically distant from their friends and their teachers, all of us are learning to use the technology and the resources that we have within our homes to help keep them connected. So what we've seen now is that for all of us, we're a lot more dependent on technology than ever before for our education, for work, but also for our social contact. And for many of us, our recreation and our creativity and our shopping, and even for some of us, our physical exercise. We're learning to see the full range of things that are possible by being connected online. We also know that many parents are struggling to understand and supervise their children's tech use, as well as what they want to do. And even though schools are working really hard to keep students connected, implementing virtual learning with some terrific resources, we know that not every parent feels really confident about doing that. One of the things that we've seen, and it's not surprising because kids are now so much more connected in the last couple of weeks, we have seen worryingly an increase in cyberbullying. There's been reports of about a 20% rise in reports of cyberbullying, and that's always really concerning, I think. We've also seen, though, that there's been an increase in some racial harassment of children online, particularly children from within Asian communities, because of some of the general fears and distortions being spread around the how the virus is transmitted. And we've also seen a bit of pile on of kids who might be inadvertently breaking some of the social distancing rules and regulations. So we know that within this environment, there's a bit more tension, a bit more opportunity to be able to find cracks within children's confidence. So all of us, I think, as families have got some real responsibilities. So Sal, I thought I might go through some of the things that might help families be able to deal with that environment.
Oh, certainly. What parents can do at home, I think, would be wonderful to protect children. Okay.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to recognise that as a family, we're in this together. And that might sound a little bit corny, but it's a real opportunity while we're having dinner or having breakfast together to talk about, well, what does it mean for us all to be sequestered in this house together, whether it's a unit or if it's a big house, it doesn't really matter. Suddenly we're all face-to-face, mostly 24 hours a day in the place together. So learning to come to terms with the fact that the NBN might not accommodate all of us at the same time.
Very true. That's happened in my house.
Very true. Yes. Absolutely. That for different times that some of us are going to need to be, for example, talking out loud or being part of Zoom or Microsoft team meetings. So what does it mean about being respectful to each other when we all want to use our screens? How do we make sure that we are using the internet or the relatively rationed download capacity within our house, taking turns, scheduling it, talking to each other, and acknowledging that everyone has needs? That's a really important part of it. I think a really good thing to do is learning from each other about how the alerts work on our apps and our phones. What do we need to turn on and what do we need to turn off? It's really frustrating to be in a group with five people suddenly within the same couple of rooms and have all of the alerts going on and off each other's devices regularly can drive people crazy. Helping people understand what the settings are within the their devices and their social media accounts so that we've got high levels of security, because we might be sharing data within our family for the first time that we haven't. One of the things I think is really important for families is agreeing when and where it's okay to use devices. So making agreements about whether we're going to use them within bedrooms, within communal areas or not, within areas where there's privacy, just having those discussions and about talking about the respect for people's privacy. On the other hand, what I think it's really important is that families, particularly with younger children, also take this time to spend a bit more time getting to know what their children's online activities might involve. This is a really good time for it to be almost a learning opportunity for you as a parent while teaching your child as well. So get them to show you the games and the apps that they want to play and why. So you're making a more educated decision and having a conversation with them where you respect the fact that this is important to them and why. But also educating yourself as a parent. You're going to be in a room with your child playing these games for the next few months. You actually now have no reason not to know how safe they are or they aren't. So it's a real opportunity to step into their world and learn a lot more about the things that excite them, and for you to have a bit more of a note of caution, I guess, about what that might be. And there are some very popular activities and apps that children want to use that really are not particularly suitable for them. This is the time where you have a responsibility to get to know more than you've ever known about their online lives.
Because I guess one of the concerns with a lot of parents is that virtual schooling is starting in the next couple of days. And for many people, the iPads are going to be a form of babysitting, which we know is a big, has been a big no-no. But you might want to articulate that more. But I was thinking, Lisa, from your point of view, from the policing point of view too, has there been an increase in predatory behaviour at all because of people taking advantage of the fact that so many children are on devices at the moment?
Thanks, Sally. I would echo the commentary that Leslie just provided in terms of some of those key messages and things that families and parents in particular can do to help keep their children being safe online. I just, before I answer your question directly, if that's okay, Sal, I just wanted to add that the ACE last year did some research in terms of parents talking to their children about online safety. And what came out of that research was that only 52% of parents have those conversations with their children. So that's a bit of a worry. So when you talk about predatory behaviours and what do us as law enforcement see, the fact that a large portion of parents aren't even having any conversation with their children is certainly, as a police officer, is a bit of a worry. So
reason for that, Lisa? Did they say that it's because it was lack of their own
privacy
knowledge?
Privacy. Okay. Yeah, it plays a part, and you know, having to have those conversations and controls around. And I think it was something that Leslie said previously about knowing what your children are doing, what applications they are accessing when they are connecting online with friends or with unknown people. It's having sometimes those difficult conversations with your children, but I think it's also about making kids feel safe and comfortable having those conversations. So conversely, if parents make it so that it's okay and it's not a big deal to have that conversation, mm-hmm. I think that's going to contribute some ways to seeing, hopefully, a greater number of parents having more awareness and oversight of what kids are accessing online. I don't know if you agree. You're nodding, Leslie. I'm hoping you're agreeing with what I'm saying.
I completely agree. I think one of the things that we know is that the worst thing you can do with your child is when something goes wrong, to have the first response, which is to say, it's your fault, or the first response to say, we're going to get you off that app, or I'm going to take the device off you. It's the worst response you can have when something goes wrong, because the first thing your child is going to learn is, if something goes wrong, as soon as I tell them, I'm going to be the one who takes the problem, it's my problem and I'm going to lose it. You've got to have an opportunity. This is a really good opportunity to reset your own feelings about that and understand that your job is to be your child's guide and support while they explore the online world, and recognize it's going to be a part of their life forever. And the answer is not to ban them. The answer is to equip them with the right skills and knowledge to be as safe as possible, and also to be acting as a responsible and ethical person themselves online. So it's a real opportunity, not only just to keep them safe, but also reinforcing the sort of behaviours you want them to be as a good online citizen as well.
Yeah. And I think sadly, from law enforcement perspective, you know, we know that last year the ACE received around approximately 17,000 reports of online child, or referrals of online child exploitation, and that's pre-pandemic. You know, so I guess in answer to your question, Sally, and to reaffirm what Leslie indicated, how critical it is that children online feel comfortable and can trust that they can go to their parents if something has happened online. We know that as consistent with the environment we find ourselves in, that there are going to be predators out there who are going to exploit the opportunities of the in the online environment to exploit children. That's just the reality of this. And so in line with the fact that children are spending more time at home and more time online, we are seeing and experiencing an increase in referrals in alignment with that, whether they're reports from the public or they're referrals from our law enforcement partners or NGOs. So certainly, you know, the evidence at the moment is consistent with the fact that more people are online, meaning that we are receiving more referrals.
Sure. And I know there's some really simple things you can do, Sal, I think, as a parent. You help your child from a very early age understand what private means. What does it mean? How do you keep your own details private, and how do you maintain your privacy online? Help them understand what to do if someone approaches them who they don't know. how they can block somebody who's doing something inappropriate, how they can make a report, and also how they can come to you. There's lots of things, practical things that parents can do around improving the security settings of the devices their children are using and checking the games. So for example, a lot of online games have a chat feature and parents often are unaware of that, or they think that, oh, I'm only going to let them chat with the three friends and I know those three friends personally. What we know is that there are so many security breaches of chat functions within children's online games that by and large, they're not something we recommend at all for children, particularly children under 13. You've got to be really careful and be, if your child is playing an online game that has a chat function attached to it, being hyper vigilant about that, because as Lisa said, unfortunately, there are people who take advantage of the fact that our children think someone who's friendly is a friend, and they're not necessarily. Yep. So there's some of the things that you can do that keep your child safer within what can be, you know, a fantastic opportunity, but also it can be an area of risk and danger for children.
And if anyone listening to this podcast wanted to go to an area on the website, either on ACE or on Alana Madeline, there are great tips and educational links, aren't there, on both websites. Yep. Lisa, do you want to talk a little bit about ACE and how it was formed? Because I think we mentioned it.
Lisa.
Lisa. Sorry, I'm
really. There's two L's.
So going back to ACE, Lisa, would be fantastic to talk a bit about how it was actually formed. But it's quite an amazing organisation that's growing rapidly, being under the stewardship of the Australian Federal Police. Would you like to chat about that? Because we would direct listeners to that website as well.
Absolutely. So the Australian Centre to Counter Child Exploitation was established through funding from the federal government to create a multidisciplinary, multi-agency centre to make Australia a leading country in terms of how we counter, we deter, detect, disrupt, prevent child exploitation from occurring. And as you correctly said, Sally, the Australian Federal Police are currently the lead agency that are coordinating the effort of the centre nationally. And as you both know, the prevention piece is critical to the work delivered by the ACCC. And we see ourselves as that coordination point, and that it's really vital for it to be successful that we have engagement and contributions from, you know, important agencies, World Congress, Alana and Madeline Foundation, and others, you know, that we all work in collaboration with each other to really, you know, deliver, you know, nationally consistent prevention actions through the centre. So to date, we've all come together previously and we've all participated in different working groups and forums as part of that coordination point. So the Australian Centre to Counter Child Exploitation really brings together agencies from across government, from across non-government organisations, industry, to partner and collaborate on delivering national consistency in terms of how we all work together to counter child exploitation. That's one of the strengths of the centre, and that's one of the parts, I guess, that have really led it to going from success to, you know, one success to another. Particularly, you know, with law enforcement, the operational arm, you know, I think you see from the ACCC, it is that capability that supports our state and territory partners and our international partners to go forth and deliver against those predators out there that look to cause harm to our kids. And it's not it, it's in itself. It goes and supports others to, I guess, counter the online child exploitation in particular. It's, you know, we're seeing it grow from strength to strength. We look to have Queensland Police co-located and embedded into the ACCC in the not too distant future, and our wish and hope is that we will also have secondees from other national, state and territory jurisdictions in the not too distant future. And we have John Rouse. He now works in the ACCC, and for those people listening that have worked in the child exploitation space for some time will know of John's expertise. So that's a wonderful inclusion to the centre to have his expertise there. And we're looking to have some international experts, particularly around things like victim identification, to better support the work that our national partners do, so that capability can enhance the work undertaken by our partners, so that we can hopefully protect kids much more effectively at a national level. Or a global level, I should say.
And we are such a strong supporter of the work of the centre. And, you know, I can already see there's some amazing things that are coming out of it through the collaboration. And one of the things that's really interesting is I think we've all come to terms with the fact that we've recognised through the research that parents are not good at having this conversation with their kids. And being able to develop some better tools, better linkages with communities that need to learn about the risk, but also how you build protective behaviours into your children's activities and knowledge and practices. That's a really important part of what I think the centre is doing, is trying to bring together that research base and evidence base with practitioners and with organisations and groups who can help deliver some of those and craft some of those messages. And that's wonderful, you know, to see the preventative arm as well as the policing arm, investigative arm, working together, because we all recognise, you know, the exponential growth in this requires that we have to really lift our game. So I'm excited by some of the changes that we're already seeing. And it's a terrific example of leadership, I think, across a lot of spheres. You know, when Lisa says she rattles off all those groups, that's not easy to get that level of cooperation. It's not easy, but it's already bearing fruit.
Yeah. Thank you. We try.
It's true. I was also going to raise one other thing, if that's okay. One of the things that we've really noticed has been, every disaster produces an environment for scamming. And one of the things that we've, you know, it happens during hurricanes, it happened during the bushfires, and we have sadly already recognised that this is happening online. And really weirdly, that so much of the scamming is being directed towards adolescents as well. It's very interesting. So while adults have always been the target of scams and manipulations, COVID-19 seems to have particularly brought out a lot of things which are kind of child attractive scams and misinformation and disinformation campaigns. So what we know is, you know, we're so early into this disease that information keeps evolving. And the trouble is that when the science is not settled on something, it gives a real opportunity for people to try to distort messages and to exploit people's worries and concerns. So some of the things that we've seen have been emails, texts, ads, phone calls, social media messages, which promise to send, push you first on the list for the COVID-19 vaccination, or a promising a remedy that's going to help, or a prevention drops that you can take. We've already seen those. We've seen links that invite people to click on to get information about where a COVID-19 outbreaks in your suburb, which put a link on there. And it's really enticing because people want to know how many people in my suburb click on that link. And then it asks people to provide personal information when they click on the link. That we've seen invitations inviting people to be personally tested, fast-track testing for COVID. And also, if you know somebody who's been affected by COVID, where they can get help, and we can help you with that. And we can also provide funding to support you if you've been affected by COVID. All of those things are because people realize that there's a level of heightened tension and a lot of interest in this subject. So we've seen people trying to exploit that by sending out things that are going to try to trick people. So one of some of the things that we want you to have those conversations with your children is, if somebody's sending you something and you don't know them, be skeptical first about what this might be. If you don't know who they are, then you can't really be sure that the information is true. And remind them that some people say things that aren't true. And that's a really important message to remember. You know, young kids can read, but they don't always have the level of judgment, particularly if something is designed on a page or in a link that looks official. Remind children that passwords and personal details are really important privacy things. They're just like your phone numbers or your bank details, and they need to be kept private and to never share them online, no matter what they're being asked. Help children to understand what a scam might look like. If they get a message, does it contain a weird-looking web address? How to click through to check the web address? Ask them if there's spelling mistakes in it. Amazingly, so many of the scams have spelling mistakes. Does it claim to be from one person but shows up on a different address? Does it ask you to click on a link? Never click on a link. Does it invite you to take up a free offer? And does it ask you to send personal details or send money? One of the things that parents can do during this time, knowing that their children, particularly young adolescents, are being targeted for these scams, is make sure all of your antivirus and anti-spyware software on your computers is up to date. Do a check, do a scan of that. And remind children, if somebody asks you to donate money, even if it's for a good cause, come and talk to you beforehand. Don't donate money, because there are unfortunately tricksters. If your children do get scammed, it's also really important to remind them that it's not that they're stupid, and that's really important, that scammers are doing this deliberately to play on their curiosity or their need for knowledge or their good feeling, and that a lot of adults have been scammed as well. But also show them what they can do to remedy that, how they can report it, how they need to talk to a trusted adult, how they can go to the ACCC Scam Watch and report them, and how they can report them to the Office of eSafety or the platform from which they've gone. So help children take a bit of control if they've been tricked or if they've been fooled.
Yeah. No, all really good life skills. And Lisa, what do you think parents, if parents do see something really disturbing online involving children, what is the message, that what do you want them to do?
So if their child is experiencing any issues online, the first thing we would say is that it's critical that you try and gather some evidence in whatever way you can. So if that means take some screenshots, for example, or photos of whatever the particular content is, that would be the first thing. Then once you've gathered some evidence, then we would be suggesting that you block and report what it is, if it's an app, a site or a platform, wherever whatever the issue is has occurred, please report it. If you think the message from a police officer, first and foremost, above and beyond anything else, if you think your child's in imminent danger, always, always, always please call 000 before you do anything else. The other way that parents can also report if they're not sure is the report abuse button that is on the AFP website, and it's also on our Think You Know, which will be connected to the ACCC website. We encourage parents to report it through the report abuse button. And also, if anything else fails, I think as Leslie indicated, there are other eSafety, there are other locations that where parents can go to look for resources of how to refer or seek advice.
What we'll do is we'll provide links to the that you've mentioned today, so we can actually help parents who are listening to this podcast. We'll hopefully have those at the bottom of the website, so you can all have a look at that, and particularly with that education piece too.
Parents can sit down with their kids and do the Dolly Stream Digi Pledge as well. That's super fun, and it gets them to go together as, you know, the parents and the children, doing simulated activities of what they might be doing online and answering questions and thinking about their answers. And it's terrific. And we've had lots of families do it so far. They've really enjoyed it. And every time they've done it, they've learned something new. Oh, and wonderful. That's a really good, fun way to learn together. And it's got all of the updated links and apps that you can play with, and you can see what it's like to actually go on Instagram together if you've never done it as a parent, and what it means and how you do it and how you report, etc. All of those things.
Oh, brilliant. Well, Liz, if you want to make sure that you send me that link, we'll make sure it's connected to the podcast. Yes.
Sally, could I also ask that you connect the Think You Know website also, yes, if that's okay?
Absolutely.
Because it also gives some advice on other agencies like Kids Helpline and the like that, yep, kids, yep, may want to connect to.
Brilliant. Yeah. Look, that has been a brilliant snapshot.
Is it all right?
Provided those necessary links. And thank you to you both, extremely busy people doing very, very important work. And thank you so much for being part of this podcast. I know it will be incredibly popular, and we'll make sure that it gets out to all the right people and online. So until further, we'll together, presenting together again. Hopefully
thank you both.
The rest next year. It's been really, really lovely speaking with you. So thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.